Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Rich Ingram. Rich is a motivational speaker, an endurance athlete, and a combat wounded Army veteran. He's known for his keynote speech, Raw Resilience, and Rich shares his journey from surviving a roadside bomb attack to becoming the first combat wounded amputee to commission as an Army officer. And today we'll discuss his incredible story, the concept of raw resilience that he talks about, and how veterans can apply these lessons in their own lives. So before we get into all that, Rich, really, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I briefly mentioned in the intro the roadside bomb attack that you survived. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of what happened that day? This was back in 2005, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it was in 2005. It was my first deployment. We were about 3 months into deployment. So we were in just southwest of Baghdad. So a lot of folks might remember it as the Triangle of Death back then. So Lutafia, Yusufia, Mamadia. So we were somewhere around Yusufia. And, at that time, we didn't have MRAPs, we just regular Humvees, and I think we had just started getting the up armor Humvees, and so I was a rear gunner on the 50 on this patrol. So I was in a scout platoon, and so we're four vehicle Humvee patrol, and I'll just tell you, I found every bit of my purpose in the military. I volunteered for every mission that I could, and just trying to fill shoes of the guys that have gone before us, and so that's why it was so devastating. And instead of, getting the fight that I envisioned, we struck an ID. And so, being the rear gunner, like I didn't see the blast. I didn't see, anything. I just remember getting catapulted in the air, and then we were thrown into a roll. But during that time, you're taught as the gunner, you drop down and grab the radio mount in a rollover. And so that's what I tried to do. And maybe I did it well. But I just remember saying to myself over and over again, lights out, say a prayer. Cause I knew I was going to die. I mean, we had, back at Fort Stewart before we deployed, a gunner died in a rollover. I mean, and that was in training. Mm-hmm. Somehow I got thrown out of the turret, and I remember hitting the ground. Like it was like kind of a meta moment. Like, is this real? But when I looked up, I saw my driver was now unconscious in the passenger seat of the Humvee. And so when I went to move towards him, that's when I felt what I thought was a break in my arm. And so, cause when you have that kind of traumatic injury, it takes a while for your nerves to catch up. And so when I went to feel for the break, my hand just hit nothing. Yeah. And so when I look down, I see my arm mangled, lying on the ground, connected by a piece of tissue no bigger than your pinky finger. And so now I'm back in this I'm gonna die again mode. And so I picked my arm up and ran with it. And so I just cradled it and ran and started, kicking the Humvee door, tourniquet. And this driver, I mean, he had just caught up with us, I think like 2 weeks prior. He's 18 years old, like right out of basic training. Hmm. And I mean, he executed flawlessly. I mean, once he came to, he put the tourniquet, he reached in my pocket, put a tourniquet on, and everybody, set up a security perimeter. Unfortunately, we weren't in a firefight or anything like that. I think we've taken some small arms fire, but that's it. And, we just waited for the medevac to arrive. And so that was kind of how everything went down. And my squad leader as well. So he was, TC, truck commander. all of a sudden, when I'm leaned up against the Humvee, we hear him saying, "Would someone please get this Humvee off me?" Well, he got ejected as well. I guess during the blast, at some point, the vehicle landed on. Ooh. And yeah, but it was supporting his helmet was supporting his body, like the weight of the Humvee. So, I mean, somehow that Kevlar helmet had gotten, you know, turned around and the leaf springs of the Humvee, I guess, were sitting on it. And I mean, his head would have gotten smashed, but he suffered some injuries as well, obviously broken back and some other stuff. But yeah, so, you know, fortunately no one was killed, during that attack. But yeah, that was it, man, to change my life.
Man, you have just given me like a greater respect for all of the heavy equipment that we had to wear, that a lot of times I'd be out there in the heat cursing it because it's like, this is so damn heavy and hot. And, you know, but I mean, that helmet saved his life, right? That if it wasn't for that helmet, you know, that unfortunately would have had a tragic ending. You know, not to say that it wasn't tragic in its own way, but, you know, and even more so with a loss of life, you know, yeah. But I can only just imagine. I mean, I haven't had an experience like the one that you had where, you know, probably adrenaline pumping, you know, the nerves, like you said, the nerves didn't catch up, you know, right away. And then you see your arm laying there on the ground, and kind of pick it up and run with it. Like, what's going through your head at that point? I mean, it can't be anything good. Obviously you said like, well, this is going to be it. But I mean, you know,
dying here.
Okay.
That's what's going through my head.
Excellent.
You know, cause when the vehicle, after the vehicle sustained, you know, the initial blast, I can't control that. Right. I mean, sure. There's only so much that I can do, but, you know, I know that the tourniquet's going to stop the bleeding and I can do something about that. And so, but yeah, that was the first thing. It's like, I'm not fucking dying in this country. You know, like that's not in the cards for me. And so, you know, from there, I knew my arm was gone. Right. Yeah. One of my best friends came over, held my hand. They were getting upset at me because I was closing my eyes. And it's like, dude, it's July. It's 120 degrees. You know, there's no shade. And I'm laying down. So, you know, Paul held my hand the whole way to the chopper. And I remember when we were running the chopper, he's like, as much as you can whisper with prop wash and everything, but he's like, guys, watch his arm is falling off the stretcher. And I'm like, dude, I can hear you, you know, like, I mean, cause it literally was attached by something like this. But I'll never forget, once I got put on that helicopter, Paul let go of my hand and he said, "You're going to be all right, man. I'll see you soon." And he was killed a month later.
Oh,
yeah. And I'll never forget when I got that phone call, cause he and I were really close. And that was when I first learned, like, are you sitting down? You know, I mean, I all fell out. Mm-hmm. But you know, everybody did their job, and that was what saved my life. I mean, everybody had a place to be, a job to do, and they did it because we trained to you know, execute during those kind of times.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things that you hear from people in these kind of situations where it's like, it's almost like a reflex. Because you've trained on it so much, muscle memory, maybe whatever you want to call it, where you just do your job. And, you know, like that young kid who was just out of basic training, who put the tourniquet on your arm, like that's something he probably only learned how to do just a few months prior, you know,
like
nobody knows, like nobody does tourniquets, like just for fun, you know, like before you need to know how to do that, you're in that type of position. Whether it's a paramedic or military, whatever, like most people don't know how to do that. And so likely he just learned how to do that just a little while ago. And here he is now, holy crap. Now I got to put this thing on somebody. You know, that's, whew, man, thank God for the training. Right. So
yeah,
you had this, not here kind of attitude. I'm not going out here, not in this country, not now, not this way kind of thing, right? And I got to imagine that kind of led to this concept of raw resilience that you talk about, right? Like, how does it kind of apply, you know, and how do you use that kind of concept to overcome challenges like this and other challenges in folks' lives?
Yeah, you know, so raw resilience, I mean, it took me a while to kind of figure out when I was looking back, okay, I've had a couple different defining moments in my life where I've had to reinvent myself, so to speak, because even whether you've had a traumatic injury or you're just, you know, ETSing, like, mm-hmm. ETS is tough, man, right? Yeah. You know, because especially you're 20 years or a lifer or whatever, or, you know, either short-term service, you've done 2-3 deployments, coming out of fifth gear like that and going into the civilian world, it is transformational, and most of us suffer. Yeah. You know, especially guys that are coming out of direct action units, you know, it's just different. And so for me, you know, like, I'm going through a slump right now. And the reason is because, I failed this weekend. I had a race, and it's the first race that, a DNF, as we call it. So I got a do not finish. And that stings, man. Like, it hurts. Mm. Like, I failed. And so what this process has taught me is the first thing that I did, it was a night race, so I got some sleep first, but next thing was like, what could I have done differently? And what will I do differently for the next time? There is no, you know, I'm not saying it makes things easier, but it makes them a lot shorter, right? So the emotions that we feel a lot of times of, you know, whether it's not feeling worthy or having issues, you know, reconnecting, because that's one of the biggest things is, like, a lot of people we feel don't understand us, and we're not far off from that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can't understand us because they haven't been in our situations. And so, you know, for us, that's a big deal. But raw resilience, the framework that I came up with, what it does is, and it's three things, is purpose, mindset, process. So purpose, mindset, process, in that order. And so we start by finding what our purpose is. And it's just asking why repeatedly, you know, you feel like you, okay, this is your purpose. Okay, why? Because of this. Okay, why? And we keep going down. And I always say, if you're driving and you get hit by a Mack truck today and you're in a hospital and, you know, a paraplegic or whatever, will your purpose still be the same? If it's will not be, then that's not your purpose. You need to go deeper with it, right? And so, you know, for me, I looked at my soldiering being my purpose. I've looked at running being my purpose because I'm addicted to it for many reasons, which I'm sure we'll get to. But that's where I always start, is that purpose. And then following the process. So going into our mindset is exactly, you know, like, after this weekend, the first thing I did was like, how can I turn this negative into a positive outcome? And I'll tell you right now, immediately what I did. So, you know, I dipped Copenhagen in like a banshee, and I go in and I started reading all these medical studies on thermoregulation of your body and how nicotine affects that, and, you know, it's a vasoconstrictor, so your muscles go, as an endurance runner running in 97 degree heat, your blood, if your vessels are constricted, blood can't get to your muscles as well or as quickly, which means oxygen can't get to them as quickly. So you're literally starving your muscles for oxygen. And, you know, on top of that, your body, your skin flow, that's how your skin blood flow is diminished or, you know, some minimalized from the nicotine, which is how you cool down your body. So, I stopped dipping. And so I'm using that as like, this is a reason. And I'm only, what, 3-4 days in now. So I'm wanting to, you know, pull my little hair I have out. but that's the mindset. That's the mindset process. And then process is it's kind of around a challenge immersion. And so what it is aligning something with what you love doing with your purpose, and then immersing yourself in that challenge, and you're working on it every single day to pursue whatever it is. So for me, one of my biggest challenges is ultra running. So I have a 100-miler next month. So, you know, that aligns with my purpose, which is to motivate and inspire. And so I do something every day towards that goal. What this does is it resiliently postures me to tackle adversity. Now, not just, you know, any kind of adversity, but unforeseen adversity. So I'm going to react differently because I've gone through these three steps and continue to go through and practice these, you know, whether you want to call them a battle drill or whatever, I'm now in a better position to, you know, tackle those unforeseen events, because it's just another part of the process, another part of the journey is coming along. And so that's how I use it. I know it's kind of a long-winded answer to it, but it's, you know, it's true. I was going through some depression and still am right now just because of this race. You know, I feel like a failure. Like, I'm not supposed to be DNF in races at this point in my life, but you know what? It happens, and the only thing I can do is learn from it and, you know, tackle the next one.
Well, I think that's a great way to look at any sort of setback. And I don't want to use the word failure, because that was kind of a setback. You know, it was like, you know, you trained for this race, you had, you know, this goal in mind. Okay, I'm going to finish, and, you know, finish maybe in a certain amount of time. And you had all of these visions for what was going to happen, but didn't end up working out. You didn't finish. And okay, so now, like you said earlier, when you got tossed from that Humvee, there's nothing you could do about that. I mean, when you're flying through the air, you're kind of out of your control at that point. It's like you're going to land someplace, and where you land. Yeah. That's not on you. But you can go back and do an after action report and figure out, okay, what can we do differently next time? How do we make this better? And, you know, what were some of the negatives that took place during this race, let's just say, you know, the race that you did, you know, why were these things, you know, going back, like, ask why. That's one of the things that we do in the work that I do, you know, outside of this podcast. We call it the five whys. You ask why five times, and it's not always five, but sometimes it tends to be five. Yeah. By the time you get to that fifth why, you figured out what the root cause of whatever that issue is, right? And so, like, you kind of figured out, oh, okay, well, the nicotine was, you know, it wasn't allowing you to cool your body down. You know, the oxygen wasn't getting to where it needed to go to. Okay, well, there's one problem. Let's get rid of that nicotine and see if that solves the problem.
Yeah, the low-hanging fruit. It's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it is and it isn't, because, you know, like you said, you're also wanting to pull your hair out as you're coming off of that,
right? You know, but, it's easily identifiable as a problem.
There it is.
So, you know, that you know, whether it's the issue, because I was vomiting uncontrollably, violently, and you know, it was pretty brutal. And so, I mean, I'm with you. And one of the biggest things, though, is that not letting our emotions control the aftermath, because that's often what ends up happening, because we don't have a way out of it. There's no, we don't have a process for the next step. Okay, well, you know, what's the next objective here? And so that's where I think, you know, we're always going to feel those emotions. And I don't like labeling them as negative, because we need to use them. Our brain's telling us something, but at the same time, you know, they lose their power or control over us if we are prepared, you know, for that situation as much as we can be. You know, and so, yeah, you're right. It's not really not a failure at all. It's just, it's a learning lesson.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I sat out in the heat for 3 hours waiting for this race to start at 7 PM. That was probably stupid. You know, a lot of things, but that's the main thing, is like, hey, what's next? And we're going to learn, and we're going to implement those strategies for the next thing.
Let's go. And I think when I hear this raw resilience, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, keep pushing forward and tackle the next thing and do it as best as you can. Learn from what happened this last time and just keep going, because you could have not finished that race and you could have been like, you know what, screw it. I'm never going to run another race again. I'm done, because obviously I'm not good enough. And you could have had all this self-doubt and all this negative talk in your head, but you know, how helpful is that? It's not going to help you accomplish the goal of finishing a race or getting to the point where you are winning races. That might be one of the goals in life, is to get to the point where you're winning these races. But you won't get there if you just quit. So, you know, all that negative talk that could be going on, and I'm not saying it's not going on, because you probably do have a little bit of that going on too, but you kind of have to tell those thoughts in your head to like, just shut up for now. like you're done. You're not helpful. I don't need to listen to you right now. What I need to do is just focus on how do I overcome this? And this is more than just running, you know, for the listeners. This is like any setback. You know, if you lose a job, or, you know, relationships, or God, it could be anything that is a setback. In your case, it was running, but it could be any number of things.
I get on stage and bomb. That sucks.
That could happen. Yeah.
Trying something new and it doesn't drop like you think. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's sure. All, you know, but it's all relative, right? And we can never plan for the exact thing, but the biggest thing is like you are hit in the gut with something. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if you at least have some kind of plan in place where, and you know, like my framework isn't necessarily even a plan. It's just positioning you in a different way. So it doesn't matter. And that, in the raw part, where the raw part comes with, when we're finding our purpose, we got to be true. We got to be honest with ourselves, because we lie to ourselves all the time. And it's not necessarily our fault. It's just where we're at in society, right? Like we want to get this name brand stuff or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And so it's like, you've got to be true. Are you really that good? Come on, man. Like, be honest with you, or whatever. Sure. Like, however you're trying to define your purpose and goals and stuff like that. You know, you got to be able to take an accurate inventory of where you are right now and what you have mm-hmm. to be able to get to where you want to go. And so, you know, I think that is just as important is being true to yourself in the whole process. Because when you do have, like, I've had negative self-talk, but instead of me like keeping it at bay, what I try and do is I give it time. I'll give it attention, but I do it in a different way. I'm like, okay, you know, is that true? Like, okay, we're saying that, being tough on myself. I mean, I people would think I'm crazy. I talk to myself all the time. It's like, okay, you know, is that what I'm, am I really a dirtbag? You know, what would give me, you know, no, I mean, I was violently vomiting and could not run. I mean, that's just, you know, could I have finished? I mean, probably. Was it worth it? No, this was a C race. So logically, I try and look at everything and break it down just from a logical perspective. And 9 times out of 10, the stuff that you're telling yourself, you realize, like, look, dude, if you just be positive with yourself, I mean, you're going to come out a lot better.
Right.
Because, you know, hardly any of us are the shit bags that we tell ourselves that we are. And generally the people that are telling themselves that are not, you know, right. The people that don't tell themselves that are generally the ones that probably are. So, it's called accountability. And so,
sure.
Anyways,
yeah. And if you give a shit enough that you are hyping yourself up or talking to yourself, and you know what I mean, like, if you're probably not a shitbag, you know,
you're giving yourself the time you deserve,
right? I mean, right, you know, and in your case, like you said, could you have finished it? Yeah, maybe, but would it have been worth it? Like, you might have further, you know, caused some injury to yourself. You might have had a, you know, heat stroke, that kind of thing. Like, it has all sorts of other complications that go on. And like, is it really worth it? So, you know, at some point you got to know when to kind of throw in the towel, and being realistic too. Like, sure, maybe I can run. I might be able to run a marathon. but I'm not going to be in the Olympics. Like, let's just be real about it. Like, I'm not that good, and I never will be. And I'm okay with that. I don't want to put that time and effort into it to be that good. And I know what my limitations are. So no, you'll never see me in the Olympics. And, you know, unless I'm a spectator, you know, waving on a camera or whatever, but I'm not going to be the guy running that everyone's watching, you know?
You know, and it's ego too. Sure. I think is, we think we're being hard by not quitting or whatever it is. But again, that goes back with being raw. Like, you know, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether you're stuck in this, you know, just deteriorating relationship, you know, and you look at it, but well, like, where else would I go? Dude, if you're not happy, you got to cut ties. I mean, that's just, you know, I'm not saying always jump without a parachute, but, you know, if we're living our lives unhappy, something has to change. And that's when, you know, we got to be true with who we really are and where we want to be. And I think, you know, recently, in the last year, my wife and I decided to separate, and that was, you know, it was not an easy decision, but, it was just one of those things where, like, hey, we identified, like, we are not happy. Why am I here? And it was a tough decision. But we, you know, were able to put in the steps to move forward, and that's it. And that's where the keep moving forward piece comes from, because, you know, it's just like you say with young kids. Like, I grew up in a small town. There's nothing to do. Well, you know, I forgot the adage, but it's like idle something, you know.
Idle hands, something. Ah, shit. I forget it too. Okay.
But yeah.
I think we know what you're about. Someone will remind us.
we have to stay in process, because, you know, that's when you can spiral. If you're not moving, you're going to spiral. And so that's why, you know, that third step of the process is so important, that immersive challenge, identifying something that you can align your purpose with and really, you know, that is a has a positive, you know, effect or impact on your life. And but it has to be about you and not about anyone else, but everything else, not to say like it's just going to fall in place. You have to work at everything. But if you're constantly feeling something towards your purpose, and it's going to be uncomfortable, it's going to cause discomfort, you know, because you're working towards a goal. But as long as it's fulfilling your purpose, you know, that is one of the first steps in my mind, towards happiness. Now, again, I'll say, or I guess first time I'm saying this, we've never arrived, you know, like, nobody has ever, like, I mean, I'm talking about a setback that I just went through, separate. Like, I mean, it's never, you know, Tony Robbins is not like, he's never arrived. As soon as we think that we're never going to have these emotions again, guess what? I mean, we're going to get kicked off that horse pretty quick.
Right.
So that's what we always have to stay in process.
Yeah. And I think the key word there is the process. And so as opposed to having a goal in mind, like, I want to achieve X, whatever that thing is, just saying I want to get better at something and just continue trying to get better at whatever that thing is. I want to be a better runner in, you know, in your case, I want to get better at that, or I want to be a, you know, better father or a you know, mother, or, you know, whatever, whoever you are, whatever applies to your situation. It's just like every day I want to get just a little bit better at that. And that's like you said earlier, that's really all you have control over. And that's all you can focus on. You can't focus on all the other things that either don't bring you happiness, don't bring you closer to the goals that you have in your life. You have to really just work on those things that you can control that do bring you closer to your goal. And if you're doing things that take you away from that goal, like you're saying the Copenhagen was taking you away from the goal of being the type of runner that you want to be. Well, okay, well, something's got to go. You know, it's either the running or the dip. you chose the dip.
Oh, right? Yeah. That's it. So, and yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this is sort of common sense, right? But one of the things, and you identified this, we get in our own way and we're a pain in the ass to ourselves. And sometimes you just need to kick your ass and get in gear in order to figure out what it is that you need to do to move forward and stop getting in your own way.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to bring it back to your story here as far as, some of the obstacles that you faced, you know, with your recovery and then, you know, transitioning into, civilian life. And well, actually, and you also, you stayed in the military even after your injuries, correct?
Yes.
Or was there a break?
There was a break. So they retired me.
Okay.
And
you said no. Nice. But so you did become the first combat wounded amputee to commission as an officer. That had to be a significant hurdle. I mean, there must have been some waivers that took place there, right?
Yeah. There were a lot of waivers. What was so funny is when I got to Washington, D.C., I arrived at Walter Reed like 2 days after I lost my arm. So while I'm there, a guy asked me to be on his triathlon team. So I had run a race in the Army 10-miler, and I didn't do too poorly. So this guy was like, hey, do you want to be my triathlon team? And that decision really just catapulted my rehabilitative journey in a positive way. As soon as I went back to school, went back to college, and I continued to do these triathlons. And then that's when I, got back into ROTC at my college and everything. And so it really just changed my mindset on a lot of things as far as like, hey, I'm competing against other able-bodied individuals. Why can't I go back into the military? Right.
Sure.
And so it changed everything for me. When you're talking about waivers, funny story, I get a call about 2 weeks before I'm supposed to commission. And this would have been in 2008, I guess. And this guy calls me and he's like, Rich, dude, why didn't you tell me that you were doing this? I'm aide de camp to whomever had to sign the final waiver. And I can't remember if it was the Surgeon General or what. And that guy was the same guy that asked me to be on his triathlon team.
Oh, no way.
How crazy is that? Yeah. And now look, there were a lot of other things. I did an internship with a state senator and he got me up to DC in front of, some guys that work for, all the way from people that work for President Bush's staff. Like, it was wild. And being at a senior military college in North Georgia, we had just some heavy hitters, right? We weren't a normal ROTC. We were one of six senior military colleges. So I had a lot of help, but there were times where it was like, hey, Rich, we don't think this is going to happen. If we'd like you to stay in the program, blah, blah, blah. And, I just stuck with it. I wasn't smart enough to do anything else. I kind of knew that, my entire adult life had been in the military. And so I'd always wanted to be an officer. And so I just kept following that dream. And I knew that, they really didn't have much of an argument. Cause I was always very stern on if someone can meet a standard, who is anyone to tell them that they can't do something?
Sure.
So that was always my stance on allowing women in the infantry. Everybody back when that conversation was going on, and I've been out for I don't know how many years now, so I don't know where we're at with it, but all these people, rednecks where I come from in Georgia, oh, what do you think about them? But women, like, dude, if they can run and ruck and shoot a gun, like, why shouldn't they be in? And not the answer that they're expecting from me. And, but nonetheless, I maxed my PT scores. I could shoot expert on a rifle. My toughest thing was changing my pants, right? So I just wouldn't change them. I was just the dirty guy. I'm just kidding. But, So there were some hurdles there. But we made it happen. I had just a great support staff there. And like I just kept moving. I just kept moving towards the target and we made it happen.
And that's, to me, that's pretty inspiring because you look at all the people who are in the military, like you said, there's physical requirements. There's, you got to be able to, ruck, you got to shoot, you got to do all these things in the military, put your pants on even. but sometimes if you feel like it, but there's all these things that you have to be able to do, and they're hard things that you have to do. For someone who is completely able-bodied, no physical, issues going on with them. The Army issues those physical issues too. You'll have the bad back and the knees and everything. You'll get those eventually. Yeah. Right. But for someone like yourself, part of your arm's missing, and that makes things a whole lot more difficult, but if you can still do it, I mean, I don't see a problem with it. If you still can do all the things that are expected of you, why not have someone? I mean, someone with the resilience and the attitude that you have, hell yeah, I'd want you, like that's the exact kind of person that the Army wants, the military wants, is someone with that can do attitude and don't get in my way, because I'm gonna keep on going and I'm not gonna stop. But I know there's folks out there who are listening who probably are in a similar position to what you were describing before, maybe struggling with that loss of identity after getting out of the military, finding purpose. Maybe there's injuries that, unexpected injury like yours, and it forces them to medically retire and everything. Do you have any advice for them who maybe are struggling with that identity or just finding that sense of purpose in their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first thing is, and it sounds so cliche, but find a support network. I have to say that I have been blessed with my family for that. I've had great family and friends in my support network. I know that I just moved to Austin, so I'm new to Austin, Texas. I'm new to this area, but in New Orleans, they had an amazing VFW. I'm talking, it wasn't just, old World War II guys sitting around playing bingo and, whatever, not taking anything away from those guys, but we, from the current era, it's hard to relate sometimes, sure. Especially if you don't play bingo or, dance. And so, anyways, I think that's paramount. I would like to be more available and have more conversations with veterans, honestly, just because I think that the biggest thing is, you have to figure out your place in the world. You have to. And what that means is, like, I truly, when I look at my purpose, it is to motivate and inspire. And so, that will blossom even more. That'll change. I mean, it's not just, a stamp that stays forever. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing with that is that I'm now postured differently. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I lose my voice and I can't speak, or if I have a hurt knee and I can't run, I'm postured better to take on the next step or to figure out what my next challenge is, because I already know what that purpose is. So you have to figure that out first. You have to. And then from there, you got to start moving towards it. You have to start moving towards fulfilling it. So let's say it's this is who you maybe look at who you want to be. I have been in the fetal position on the couch before in a depressed state. Because of this. And it was shortly after I got out of the military, that was the only thing I knew. The second time I got out, it was the only thing I knew. I had I tried different things in the civilian world, and it's like, man, I don't want to do this. I built an insurance agency from scratch, sold it profitably. But during that time, I would rather cut off my right hand than sell insurance. That's not, you know, who I am. And so, you know, that's how I kind of figured out where I want to be right now. So I understand what it's like to feel lost and not connected, like completely, but you have to throw everything off your desk, pull out, you know, a journal and just say, I'm going to figure out right now who I am, my place in the world, where I want to be. If you're not sure who you are, just try and figure out where do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And then you can get to, okay, what do you have that will take you there? And that challenge immersive process is very important. And you know, again, mine is more set on running just because I'm passionate about it. And that is how, you know, that's how I keep my sanity together and how I show up positively for people. But here's how that translates, that challenge immersive part translates. So I've been waiting on putting a different talk together. And well, somebody contacted me that wants a talk that I've been thinking about putting together. Well, now they gave me a date. So I have a date. And it is like, oh, wow, all right, perfect. Yes, I can do it. I can get it done. And it's the same thing as having a race. It has to be specific, and you have to have a plan to get there. And that's why it's difficult, is because you have to execute on that plan. It is challenging. It is uncomfortable to fit all of that in and to get it done. But guess what? You can be kind to yourself. You miss a day. You don't quite, you know, like you have a setback. Like I just said, it's okay. It's part of the process. And as soon as we realize that these painful situations are just part of the process, the less that we allow them to control us, and we can keep moving forward. And that I guess is the next step, is like, dude, identify who you are, but keep moving forward. Identify the things that are holding you back. You're in this, you know, in a bad relationship or whatever it is, dude, you got to cut it. You have to cut it loose, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard because maybe that's the only thing you've ever known. You know, you've been with that person since you were 18 or whatever it is. You know, you're in a cancerous situation at work. Got to let it go. So anyways, that is my advice. I'll get off that soapbox, but I'm very, you know, connected to folks like that. And please, you know, I know that we'll give out my, contact information once we start to get done, but you know, guys can message me and gals. I just say guys, generally.
Sure. Sure. And as you're talking, I have this vision of like a mountain, like you're climbing a mountain. Right. And this mountain, it's a make-believe mountain, right? But it never, there's no top to the mountain. It keeps going forever. Every so often there's like a little plateau, and but you keep climbing. So you get to that plateau. That's like that one goal. Like in your case, that speech that you now have a date for. Okay. Well, now you're climbing up to hit that point. And that's where you are aiming for right now. But once when you get to that, you look up and okay, well, there's another plateau up there, and there might be another speech that you have, you know, kind of brewing in the back of your mind, and or some other thing, you know, maybe
another always thing. Has to be another objective. That's
exactly.
Right.
As soon there's as you always something yeah. else, right? And I think the purpose of that is so that we don't feel like if I didn't get to this one thing. Like in your case, that you didn't finish that race. Okay, fine. You didn't finish that race. Why didn't you finish the race? Let's figure it out so you can finish the next one. And then, okay, now I finish it. Now I want to get better. I want to get a better time. I want to, you know, figure out how to cool my body down better. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever the case may be. And so that's your next thing. That's your next plateau on the mountain you're climbing to figure out what that next thing is. And the whole point of this is not that, oh, it's useless. I'll never get to the top of the mountain. Why am I going to bother? The point is every time you get to that next plateau, you're better than you were on the last one. And if you keep going and you keep getting to a higher and higher and higher place, those difficult things that were once difficult to you, they become easier. Not that they're not still difficult, but to you, you've gotten better at those things. And so it's not as much of a struggle to you. And you can now do these great things. You can finish that race that you couldn't finish before. Okay, cool. Now you can do that. I'm not saying it's going to be easy to finish it, but it's going to be easier than it was before, right? And so all of these things get easier. I don't want to say easy, you know, but they get easier, right? And think about it, like go back to when you're a kid, when, you know, maybe you didn't know how to ride a bike or something. And you know, your mom or your dad or whoever taught you how to ride a bike. And then once when you figured that out, that became easy. You knew how to do it and you could do that now for the rest of your life. You don't have to go back and relearn that skill. Even if you haven't been on a bike in 20 years, you can still get on it and you know how to do it. Right. Like other things are like that too, where once when you've kind of figured things out, it just gets a little bit easier. And then you can do bigger and better things. And then you start to see this kind of snowball effect where things just get bigger and bigger and better and better. And it's just, you know, you'll start to see your life accelerate at that point, I think, anyways, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're on the same page. I mean, yeah, exactly. And get up, get moving and get outside. I mean, that's another thing. Being outside is just, for whatever reason, just provides some kind of positive, you know, psyche, you know, but yeah, and it's just like a video game, right? Like we keep up leveling.
That's another way.
And that's what you're doing in your lifestyle. When you first get to the gym, it's like, man, I can't put 45s on the side, but give yourself a month and you're putting two of them on there, you know?
Sure.
You know, so yeah, I mean, we're just training ourselves.
So. Right. Yeah. And the gym is a good example too. I mean, if you never go to the gym and you never lift weights or anything, well, of course you can't expect to lift a lot of weight, but if you go and you do it consistently, well, you're going to get better and better and better and better. And, you know, the weights that used to be really hard for you, you're going to be like, oh, this is nothing. I could do this. No problem. That's the same thing with a lot of things in life. And so you just got to keep putting in that effort, and just don't give up. Yeah. Consistency. That's a good one. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to, let folks know where they can go to find you. I know you do, you know, motivational speaking and that type of thing where they can get in touch with you to, either schedule you for a talk or, you know, whatever it is that you got going on.
Yeah, richingram.com. You know, that's it. That's the website. There's a contact section. You contact me. There's some resources and stuff there. And yeah, would love to have a conversation.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you know, I'll have all these links in the show notes for, you know, everyone to be able to check you out there so that they don't have to worry about writing that down. But really, I think it's inspiring hearing your story, hearing, you know, kind of the stuff that you had going on and, you know, how you overcame everything with a positive attitude. You know, yeah, there's going to be days, you know, that you talked about where it's, you know, a little down, a little depressed, you know, whatever, but I we all have those days and, you know, but you're not alone in that, you know?
Exactly.
We all have those and, but you got to shake off the dust and, you know, brush yourself off and keep moving forward. I think that's the name of the game. And, you know, that's a name of this podcast, Drive On, you know, like just keep moving forward. Exactly. So, Rich, it's been, an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Your story again, truly inspirational. So I'm really glad to have you here. And look forward to chatting with you again in the future. Really do appreciate it. So thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.